Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of, 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Stars of the Golden Age, a show that highlights the lives of legends from film, music, and the birth of television during Hollywood's Golden Age and the few years surrounding it. I am your host, Erin Carlson. Today, we will be talking about Rock Hudson. If you haven't listened to part one of Rock Hudson's story, please circle back and listen to that episode first. Last week, we left off at the height of Rock Hudson's film career. He had gone from a shy, lanky kid from a family barely scraping by during the Great Depression, and he grew into the hunkiest of hunky leading men in Hollywood. But underneath that cool persona hid a very private man. A man who kept his innermost thoughts locked up tight, and who struggled on a daily basis to just peacefully live the private life he yearned for. Let's jump back in. Rock Hudson played the hunky leading man for about 15 years or so, but by the close of the 1960s, the parts just weren't presenting themselves to him. He was in his mid-40s now, which is like 70 today, and it meant that it was a little more difficult to keep that toned, tight-skinned game in play. And the heavy smoking and hearty drinking lifestyle really didn't help things either. He had been brushing off television offers for years, pretty much his entire career. Like many other movie stars, he thought television was a demotion, a step down from the throne of movie stardom. But he finally realized it was in his best interest if he wanted to keep steadily working and receiving those sweet paychecks. In 1971, he was offered a very generous television offer from NBC. He would star in a 90-minute series, part of the mystery movie cycle, called McMillan and Wife, which was loosely based on the classic Thin Man movie series. And he was offered the highest pay yet offered to a television star, $120,000 per episode. Adjusted for inflation, that would be $947,500 today. Hard to turn that down. McMillan and Wife was a hit and aired for 6 years. While settling into his new life in television, Rock Hudson was approached by the amazing Carol Burnett to do a theater revival of I Do, I Do. Rock Hudson had never done theater before. Where many actors begin in theater and work their way into the movies, this wasn't the case for Rock. This, at the age of 48, would be the first time he would ever do a theater production. He was a nervous wreck. In fact, all of his close friends were nervous wrecks for him. None of them, even Rock, knew what to expect when the first line was to be delivered. Would he freeze or would he deliver? But he did awesome. A true star. I Do, I Do ran for 2 tours, including a performance at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., and a later run in London. It turned out Rock Hudson loved the theater. He went on to do a few more stage productions throughout the rest of the 1970s, and he stayed busy in television shows and miniseries throughout the 70s and into the early 1980s. He was initially reluctant to take on both television and the stage, but he was loving both. It's good to step outside of our comfort zone sometimes. He was really enjoying this new chapter in his life. life as an aging actor, a really lucky aging actor. He may have been slowly pushed out of the dashing leading man roles on the big screen, but he had made a pretty successful transition onto the small screen and stage, and he was really enjoying it. In November of 1981, 56-year-old Rock Hudson began experiencing chest pains. Sharp, shooting chest pains. It turned out he had severe blockages in three coronary arteries. He underwent what turned out to be a quintuple bypass surgery. That's a major, major surgery. Before he was taken to the operating room, he said to his friend, "If I go now, I've really had a wonderful time." He was certain that he wouldn't survive the surgery, but he did. After a long recovery, Rock got back to work and back to life. His relationship with longtime boyfriend Tom Clark ended in the fall of 1982, and he began dating 29-year-old Mark Christian shortly after. Mark was young, hot, and blonde, just Rock's type. But the honeymoon wasn't very long-lived, about 18 months, and the couple began to notice they really didn't have much in common outside of the bedroom and Mark's love for Rock's money. Still, Mark remained living at the castle, even as Rock began dating a new man. Because Rock Hudson had a kind heart, he wasn't going to throw him out on the street. So he let him stay for a little while, he thought. Mark Christian didn't take the split well and seemed to be planting himself down very firmly in the castle. Rock did not like confrontations, so he wasn't going to kick Mark out. He just hoped he would get the hint eventually and move along. Well, he didn't get the hint. Or he got the hint and didn't want to move along. He had a pretty sweet deal in the castle. Not only that, but Mark allegedly threatened to expose Rock's sexuality and all of his juicy secrets to the Inquirer. I mean, does anybody actually believe the Inquirer, though? Either way, that is a huge betrayal. What a way to treat the generous man who has been financially supporting you and putting a really nice Spanish tile roof over your head. Rock Hudson had more important things to worry about, though. It's time to address it. The beginning of the AIDS panic and the end of Rock Hudson's life. By the spring of 1984, Rock Hudson began to notice he was losing a little weight. He was actually thrilled at this because he'd put on a few extra pounds as he got older, and he was happy to say goodbye to that little pudge and slim back down to his happy body. But then the weight started to vanish a little too fast. He was 210 pounds at the end of February 1984, and by the middle of May of that year, he was down to 195 pounds. Remember, he was 6'4". Then his longtime friend, Mark Miller, noticed a large pimple on Rock's neck and a distinctive smell permeating from Rock's body. Not too strong, but definitely unique and noticeable. Mark couldn't place it at first, but then it hit him. His brother had had that same subtle body odor for a few months before he died. Rock's weight continued to decrease, and the pimple was getting larger and more inflamed. He went to see a dermatologist in May of 1984, and she took a biopsy of the mass. A few days later, the dermatologist called Rock Hudson with the biopsy results. She said, "I think you'd better sit down. It's Kaposi sarcoma. You have acquired immune deficiency syndrome. AIDS." Rock didn't tell anyone. He had the pimple removed, had blood tests done, and had more definite results. He had AIDS. He didn't tell anyone for an entire week. Rock Hudson was a master at internalizing and compartmentalizing within his mind. When he finally told Mark Miller, Mark was shocked. He said, quote, "My first thought was run, get out and never come back so you don't get it and die too. I got up and walked out of the room, but my body stayed." An inner voice said, "Do not desert. Don't get out of the chair. Don't even offend him by starting to get out of the chair." Somehow I held myself in that chair. But I was in utter panic," end quote. I need to stop here and remind you that AIDS was very new and very unknown at this time. People were in a hysteria over this deadly disease. They didn't exactly know all the ways it was transmitted, kind of like the beginning of COVID, only worse. It was uncertain in what pathways the virus was passed. At the beginning of the AIDS epidemic, people were afraid that they could get it by touching or breathing the same air as an infected individual. People were terrified to be in the same room as a person who had AIDS. At the start of the AIDS epidemic, it was being reported as a terrible new strain of the flu or a new form of cancer. Even after it was realized that it was primarily affecting gay men, it was still reported as a flu or cancer against gay men. Or simply, the gay plague. But it was a very quickly spreading flu or cancer. There were more unknowns than there were knowns, and this caused pure panic. So keep that in mind when you hear Rock's friend Mark's reaction to learning of the news of Rock's diagnosis. His instinct to flee. For all he knew, he could contract AIDS just by sharing a bathroom with Rock or tasting food off the same fork. They just didn't know anything about this mystery disease yet. One thing that was certain, however, was that everyone who had been diagnosed with AIDS died. Rock Hudson was going to die. And he wanted complete silence over the matter. He didn't want the world to know he had AIDS. He had carefully choreographed his entire life to protect his strong, leading man image. He didn't want this to be his legacy. Rock wasn't a monster, though. He wanted to inform his most recent sexual partners that he had AIDS. So he sent an anonymous letter to three people. He had them sent from a different post office so it couldn't be traced back to him. The letter read, quote, "Hi, this note shall remain anonymous for obvious reasons. Since we have had intimate sexual contact where sperm has been passed between us, I feel it is only fair to tell you that I have just found out I have AIDS. I am most sorry to tell you this. I suggest you have tests made to make sure you're okay. Most sincerely," end quote. No signature. Rock Hudson went to Paris in August of 1984 to receive an experimental treatment for AIDS. After 7 weeks of daily infusions, the virus was no longer detected in his system. It was still there, he was told, but was in sort of a remission. Rock decided to only listen to the first part of that. The AIDS was gone. He was saved. With renewed energy and a second chance at life, Rock Hudson accepted a role on the super-duper popular primetime soap, Dynasty. He still did not look healthy. He was still slowly dying, and that was pretty apparent in his appearance. For his role on Dynasty, he had to deliver a passionate kiss to co-star Linda Evans. And he couldn't deliver. His lips were sealed up as tight as he could possibly seal them, trying to fake his way through that passionate kiss. They did several retakes, trying to get Rock to deliver the kiss right. Everyone on the set knew Rock Hudson could deliver a kiss. They'd all seen it dozens of times in his movies. What the hell was his problem? Linda Evans was a knockout, gay or not. Kiss the woman, for God's sake. Really kiss her. But he couldn't. He was terrified of passing his saliva to Linda Evans. Rock knew the AIDS wasn't gone. He knew. This reality had snuck back into his psyche a couple weeks after returning home from Paris. He knew he wasn't going to be cured. He knew there wasn't a cure. He knew he had AIDS. But he didn't know all the ways it could be spread. He was trying to save Linda Evans from contracting AIDS when he refused to give her an open-mouth kiss. When it did eventually come out that Rock Hudson had AIDS, there were a lot of very upset people about this scene. How could he potentially expose Linda Evans like that? The cast and crew of Dynasty were very supportive, but Dynasty and Linda Evans fans were outraged. They thought she for sure had contracted AIDS from Rock Hudson's tight-lipped kiss. They accused Rock Hudson of killing Linda Evans. But Linda Evans herself never felt any anger or fear. She only felt sadness and sympathy for Rock. She went on to publicly support him when so many others were turning against him. Rock Hudson's last public appearance was in early July 1985 on his dear friend Doris Day's television show, Doris Day's Best Friends. Everyone close to him begged him to cancel his appearance on the show. He was by now unable to keep food down. He was sleeping more than awake. He had begun to experience severe mental decline, and he was down to an astonishing 170 pounds. Remember, 6'4". Everyone urged him to cancel, but Rock would never cancel on Doris Day. He wasn't going to let Doris down, and I think he just wanted to see her one last time. She was shocked at his appearance. The news hadn't come out yet about his diagnosis or that subsequent outrage from Dynasty fans. Rock told Doris he had just gotten over the flu. She knew that wasn't true. She suspected cancer, but she respected his privacy. What she did know for sure, what her gut told her, was this was the last time she would ever see her friend, Rock Hudson. Rock returned to Paris for more treatments after his appearance on Doris's show. And then it was time to come clean with the world. An official announcement was made that Rock Hudson had AIDS. And with this, an outpouring of love and support flooded in. Tens of thousands of letters arrived for him. He was on the cover of every magazine, on the front page of every newspaper, the first story on every news program. Rock Hudson was suddenly the face of AIDS. He made it real. And he made people see that it can happen to their most beloved people, that it is a disease that doesn't discriminate. Because of this announcement, the amount of donations coming in for AIDS research was astonishing. AIDS finally had people's attention in the right way, and people were stepping up to make a change. Rock Hudson did not want to be the face of AIDS, but he brought a heightened awareness to the disease. And his close friends helped him understand that was something to be very proud of. It would help others. Rock Hudson was deteriorating really quickly now. His former longtime partner, Tom Clark, moved back into the castle to help care for him. And Rock was surrounded with a lot of love every single moment. He had his close circle in the castle with him at all times. And other friends came in a steady stream to visit, all knowing it would be the last time. Rock Hudson had a solid group of friends. They did everything they could to send their friend out, having experienced as much love and joy as humanly possible in his last weeks. Rock Hudson died on the morning of October 2nd, 1985, in his beloved home, the castle. He was only 59 years old. A small memorial service was held for a couple hundred guests, just those who had been the closest and most important to Rock. His wishes were that his close inner circle have a celebration of his life on a yacht with lots of flowing champagne. But the gathering had become too large, so it was held at the castle. One last party for Rock at the castle. Mourners and loved ones shared stories of the legend over margaritas and chili as a mariachi band played in the background. That is my kind of funeral. Tom Clark had planned a larger, more traditional funeral for the following day. He had everything arranged down to the very last detail. But Elizabeth Taylor hijacked the service and changed everything. She changed the food, the flowers, the chairs, all of it. They just let her do it. Rock would have. Elizabeth Taylor was a pioneering leader in the fight against HIV/AIDS, educating the public on the disease and raising funds to aid in AIDS research and treatment. Shortly before Rock Hudson's death, Taylor became the founding national chairman of the American Foundation for AIDS Research. She worked tirelessly to advocate for AIDS patients, help further research, share resources, acquire funding from Congress, and, most importantly, she visited people dying from AIDS. She touched them, she hugged them, she didn't discriminate against any of them. She was there for them when so many others were not. Rock Hudson's last philanthropic gift was while he lay dying in his beloved castle. He donated $250,000 to the American Foundation for AIDS Research, just days before he died. And now I would like to share some other interesting things I learned during my research. Bullet point number one, Rock Hudson was a very private man. He never came out to the world about his sexuality, nor did he owe the world any kind of explanation about his personal life. He did, however, authorize biographer Sarah Davidson to write a book about his life. And this is the book I use for my primary source in my research. Sarah spent hundreds of hours with Rock Hudson in his last months of life, as well as many of his close friends. Anyone she could get. She had Rock Hudson's blessing to finally share some of his private life with the world after he was gone. And she did a remarkable job with it. It is a great book and I highly recommend it. I stole it from my late father's prized book collection. It is called Rock Hudson, His Story by Sarah Davidson and Rock Hudson. Bullet point number two. That sketchy boyfriend of Rock's, Mark Christian, sued Rock's estate after his death, like he hadn't gotten enough from him. He alleged that he had slept with Rock after Rock knew he had AIDS, which was disputed by every one of Rock's closest friends. They said he did not like Mark. Mark Christian ended up winning a settlement of $5.5 million. It appears he was always only after Rock Hudson's money. He also stole Rock Hudson's priceless record collection, which you know meant a huge deal to him, and several expensive electronics, not too long after Rock's death. Bullet point number three. Some of the celebrities who wrote or telephoned Rock Hudson after his AIDS diagnosis became public were Ava Gardner, Mickey Rooney, Gregory Peck, Frank Sinatra, Carol Burnett, Milton Berle, Marlene Dietrich, Jack Lemmon, Madonna, and President Ronald Reagan. Bullet point number four. Charlton Heston and Anne Margaret attended the same high school as Rock Hudson, New Trier High School in Winnetka, Illinois. In conclusion, like I said at the top, I feel a little uncomfortable spending so much time focusing on Rock Hudson's sexuality, because it just feels weird caring so much about who a person is attracted to or chooses to share their most intimate moments with. Who a person is intimate with is nobody's business. But unfortunately, it did matter in Rock Hudson's day, and it did matter in his final days before his death. His wishes were to keep his private life private, not just after his AIDS diagnosis, but his entire celebrity life. But those wishes were stripped away when the news broke of him dying from AIDS. All of a sudden, all that mattered to anyone was that he had AIDS, the gay plague. His life was suddenly defined by his sexuality and the disease that took his life. Not the generous person he was. Not his funny personality. Not what a loyal friend he was. Not his work in films. Not his service in the U.S. Navy. He was the man who had sex with other men and got AIDS. And that's just so unfair. Rock Hudson was a very complex, very multidimensional, very mysterious man. He had many, many layers to him, and often people would see one layer that another person had never seen before. Rock Hudson wasn't one to share his innermost feelings. The depth of his soul were a safely guarded treasure, and only he had the key to it. He shared the Rock Hudson he wanted to share, and the deepest of his feelings would remain locked away. But he wasn't cold. He was warm and welcoming. And everyone who knew him wanted to take as many layers of Rock Hudson as he was willing to share with them. I encountered so many different individuals in my research that referred to Rock Hudson as their very best friend. These are the best kinds of humans out there, in my opinion. The ones who are considered the greatest friend of everyone they ever meet along their journey through life. I love this so much, both for Rock Hudson and for the people who loved him. Because it reminds me so much of my best friend. Her name was Jody, and she died from glioblastoma brain cancer when we were 34 years old. Oh, that girl made everyone feel like they were her very best friend. That old saying you hear on every Dateline episode, the whole room lights up when they walk in, that was her. And from what I've learned, that was Rock Hudson too. I think, like my friend Jody, he just had that special gift that made everyone feel loved and appreciated. The older I get and the more years that pass without my person with that gift, I realize just how magical that gift really is. So if you have someone in your life with that magical gift, surround yourself in that person's bubble as much as you can. Let them walk in and light up your room anytime they want, because I'm telling you, that person could be ripped away in an instant. And then you're left in a room that is still light enough to see, but the light will never shine like it used to. Another cliche, life is short. It really, really is. For some more than others. Rock Hudson was only 59 years old when he died. My best friend Jody was only 34. Not to be too blunt, but it could be our turn at any moment. Choose your moments and your friends and your actions very wisely. Choose the people you allow to walk into your room very wisely. I hope you're all lucky enough to have a Rock or a Jody in your life. Please put aside a couple hours to watch a Rock Hudson movie soon. Try Pillow Talk or Giant or Magnificent Obsession. One of my favorite things to watch Rock Hudson in is that dance scene in Come September. Please check it out. I will share a link to it. I seriously watch this thing over and over and over again. It just brings me so much joy. Let's honor Rock Hudson for what he gave the world, not how he left it. Thank you, Rock Hudson, for lighting up the screen with your big, powerful presence. Thank you for enriching so many lives, both within your inner circle and in audiences around the world who enjoyed your movies. Thank you for your military service during World War II. And thank you for being the face of AIDS in a time when it swept the world with nothing but fear. I wish you could have lived longer. And thank you all for listening. You can find valuable resources and information about HIV/AIDS at hiv.gov. You can find HIV testing sites and specialty providers at locator.hiv.gov. Also, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, or AMFAR, which is the organization Elizabeth Taylor helped found and Rock Hudson gave a generous donation to as he was dying from the disease. Their website is amfar.org. Another wonderful resource is AIDSResource.com, where you can find valuable education about HIV/AIDS and testing resources. You can learn about HIV prevention options at PlannedParenthood.org. We've come a long, long way in the understanding, prevention, and treatment of AIDS. Be careful, be aware, be your own advocate, and know help and resources are out there for you. Now it's review time. This week I'm going to share a review from Apple Podcasts that I really loved. It was the most perfectly written piece of constructive criticism that I could imagine. And after some reflection and a little research, I took it and ran with it. Apple Podcast user Just a Podcast Gal wrote alongside her 5-star review, quote, "This is a well-intentioned and well-researched podcast. There's clearly a lot of care and effort that goes into each episode, and that's felt. I think that the episodes could benefit from some music to keep the listener's attention as the story unfolds." End quote. Thank you so much, Just a Podcast Gal. As you can tell, I really took your review to heart. I personally do not like music in the podcasts I listen to. But I know some of the most popular shows do have a lot of background and transition music used for dramatic effect. I put the idea aside for a while, and then I reached out to my peers on the podcasting subreddit that is for creators and the podcast subreddit that is for listeners. An astounding number of people said, "No, stay away from music. It will drive listeners away," which kind of surprised me. But I kept it in the back of my mind anyways. I didn't want to drive listeners away from something so silly as music after I spend so many hours creating my content. And then, while driving along one day, it came to me. Why don't I do both? One for weirdos like me who can't stand the music, and one for the ones who love how music adds emotion to a story. Everyone's happy. And I gotta tell you, just a podcast gal, I actually love listening back to the ones with music now. I surprised myself. I always listen to the most recent episode on Tuesday mornings just for quality control, and I've learned that the music really has been a nice touch in how the story's played out. Just as you said it would be. I'm still learning the ropes, though. Obviously, I don't think I'm doing a very good job at it. So I hope it's sounding tolerable, and I promise it'll only get better from here. Thank you so much for your review and your 5-star rating, Just a Podcast Gal. If you want to hear your review read on the show, drop one where you listen to your podcasts or comment on one of my Facebook or Instagram posts. I'll read the good, the bad, and the ugly. Speaking of, don't forget to follow the show on Facebook and Instagram. And if you are interested in more content, I have some really interesting bonus episodes available on Patreon. This month's bonus episode is Dean Martin's Celebrity Roasts. Man, I had so much fun watching those as I wrote the episode. Dean Martin was so drunk in those shows, I don't think he probably remembered a single one of them. Aside from the full-length bonus episodes, we also have a movie of the month on Patreon. I assign a movie every month for us all to watch on our own time, and then I release a recap episode at the end of the month. This month's movie of the month is Sorry, Wrong Number with Barbara Stanwyck and Burt Lancaster. And I have a new feature coming soon for Patreon members. I really want you to get lots of bang for your buck. Head on over to patreon.com/starsofthegoldenagepodcast to join the fun. You have for sure also noticed that I've started using ads. And everyone hates ads, I know. I'm still learning the ropes with this as well, the dynamic ad world. But from what I've realized so far is that I am just as surprised as you are to hear what ads are appearing in my episodes. I'm able to voice what categories I do not want in my show, like politics. But as far as the actual companies who pick up slots, I don't think I really have control over that. Not yet, at least. Ideally, I would love to do just host-read ads because I just think it's a much more personal experience for listeners. But I haven't been offered any yet, so annoying commercial ads it is. The podcast is still costing me money each month and lots of time, so I'm hoping to make a few bucks to help recoup some of the costs of my hosting fees and research materials. So far, I have made $3.59 from the ads. So I am well on my way to Millionaire's Row. And thank you so much to my few patrons who are supporting the show on Patreon. This really means so much to me. It is a huge help. Thank you to you all, and thank you for putting up with the annoying ads. I promise not to overdo it. I'm going to do whatever I can to make the transition points tolerable and the ads minimal. As least annoying of an experience as possible for you. My primary source for this episode was the book Rock Hudson, His Story by Sarah Davidson and Rock Hudson. I also watched the documentary Rock Hudson, All That Heaven Allowed, available on Netflix, amfair.org, a smidge from Wikipedia, and IMDb.